2016, a year of remarkable stories in South Sudan. Radio Maria, year in review, will look back at the remarkable strides and the daunting challenges South Sudan faced in 2016. Coming this Saturday from Radio Maria, the year in review.
President Salva Kiir made a public apology to the nation. Also, a record-breaking fighting that left hundreds of thousands of people seeking refuge in the neighboring countries and sent the UN Security Council delegation flying to Juba and pushing for the deployment of a protection force, and the first official attempt to impose an arms embargo on South Sudan ending up in vain. Bringing a close, a momentous year in South Sudan, this is the year in review with much more to come. With me, Susan Dokolo. This year kicked off with President Salva Kiir opening the first extraordinary SPLM convention, the three-day convention, attended by up to 700 delegates, was designed to review the party's constitution and manifesto. President Kiir opened the convention with an apology to the people of South Sudan for the conflict. He also touched on the root cause of the conflict, the emergency of what he termed as communal engulfments within the party and increasing banditry across the country. Listen to what he said then.
I would like to take this opportunity, and in the spirit of Arusha Agreement, to sincerely apologize before the people of South Sudan because of the unnecessary and unbearable sufferings you, the people of South Sudan, and our beloved country have gone through in the last 24 months. These 24 months have been the longest and most difficult of my journey. The difficult months of my journey. Let me tell you, comrades, that I have, as a Christian, reconciled with myself, which is an important step for all of us as one people and one nation to reach out to each other and reach a point of harmony and unity within ourselves and with our neighbors, so that we make this extraordinary convention to be the historic and turning point at which to launch the process of national healing, forgiveness, truth and reconciliation within the overall framework of justice and accountability for our own actions as leaders of this great country, South Sudan.
That statement struck a chord for a population that hoped that the new year would provide an opportunity to unite for peace and stability. In February, the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon visited South Sudan and met with President Salva Kiir, stressing the urgency of forming a transitional government. He also spoke by phone with former Vice President Riek Machar and visited a protection of civilian site and interacted with the people affected by the conflict in South Sudan. Gabriel Shadar with a report.
During his meeting with President Kiir, the UN chief emphasized that implementing the peace agreement reached this past August must be a priority of the government of South Sudan, including the urgent formation of a transitional government of national unity with opposition leader and newly appointed first vice president Machar. At a press conference in Juba, the UN chief highlighted that he was concluding his visit to Juba at a critical time and reiterated the UN's commitment to the peace process and the future of South Sudan. This was his statement.
Put peace above politics, pursue compromise, overcome obstacles, establish the transitional government of national unity, and do not delay. The parties must know that responsibility does not end with the signing of an agreement. In many ways, it begins with the signing of agreement, and it must begin now. the humanitarian and economic situation in the country continues to plummet. Over $1.3 billion is needed to address current needs of over 5 million South Sudanese this year alone. I commend humanitarians for their work and courage. Despite assurances for safe and unhindered access in the peace agreement, aid workers continue to be targeted. At least 45 aid workers have been killed over the last 2 years, and many more are missing. I urge all parties to remove restrictions on the freedom of movement of the United Nations and humanitarian actors and ensure access to people in need of protection and life-saving aid. I urge leaders from the region and around the globe to come in full force to reimagine how the world deals with the crisis and act on a true agenda for humanity. I thank you.
The Secretary General's visit came on the heels of the UNDP and the government of South Sudan's joint launch of the National Human Development Report. The report emphasized the need for lasting peace in order to build a prosperous nation, a message that the UN Secretary General underlined in his own words during his visit. Over to you, Suzanne.
South Sudan was officially admitted into the East African Community in March this year during the 17th East Africa Community Heads of State Summit in Arusha, Tanzania. With South Sudan's inclusion, the regional bloc now covers over 150 million people with six nations including Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania and Uganda. More in the following report with Luak Nelson.
As full members, South Sudan stands to gain a lot, including a market of 140 million people. South Sudan would also be able to benefit from existing infrastructure such as roads, ports, railways, and airports, an analyst noted. However, South Sudan's admission to the community would also come at a cost. A paper from the U.S.-based Brooklyn Institute titled South Sudan's Quest for Regional Integration says the country could face stiff competition for jobs, revenue, business, and industry to more developed nations of the East Africa. Shortly after their return from Arusha, the South Sudan delegation briefed the SPLM caucus on the country's membership. Presidential Advisor on Economic Affairs, Agri Tisha, said the country would need at least 3 years to ratify protocols that would lead to the implementation of a common customs market system provided for under the regional arrangements. More than 40 South Sudanese officials participated in the negotiation process for the country to join the East Africa community. Mau Mau Atian, the Secretary General of the South Sudan Accession Secretariat in East Africa, said the Secretariat will embark on public awareness on the country's membership in the regional bloc.
The next thing is, of course, the implementation. You know, the negotiations we have carried out are elaborate. There's a lot there in terms of commitments, in terms of what we are going to do as a country in order to qualify for admission has just happened. So the next stage now is the implementation of our commitments, and they will begin with the ratification of the agreement. We just don't walk in tomorrow, no. It will have to be ratified by our institutions here, Minister of Justice, Council of Ministers, to Parliament, to the President. It may take no less than 3-6 months, you know, or even a year. It was not easy. We had to, of course, there's something, I can hear our people talk about something called sensitization. That means creating awareness so that our people can understand. We had to begin that with ourselves in the Secretariat, creating awareness among ourselves and then sensitizing ourselves to understand the issues involved. So we even begin with the training. We train some of our staff, those who are directly members of the Secretariat, and those who join us from our institutions. Over 70 people actually got the training, and this agreement was negotiated by over 40 officials of South Sudan. So it was not easy. We had to answer over 150 questions that were sent to us from the East African community, just to ascertain whether we have institutions in place that once we are accepted we'll be able to implement what we have committed ourselves to, yes.
In line with this, the former Foreign Affairs Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin says South Sudan should use its membership in the East African community to exploit the potential of its untapped resources. Marial said the region will be an open market for the country's 30 million head of cattle and their byproducts.
In April, we saw the arrival to Juba of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement Army in opposition leader Riek Machar to take up the post of the first vice president, a condition of the peace agreement signed in August last year, and a tentative step towards a transitional government of national unity. Lucy Jubara with the details.
Machar's return had been earlier delayed over matters related to his security detail and the amount and types of weapons he would be able to bring with him. His demands included machine guns, laser-guided, and anti-tank missiles. Dr. Riek Machar arrived in Juba in April, touched down aboard a UN flight, and took his oath as first vice president of South Sudan shortly after. Machar was sworn in by Chief Justice Chanret Medud in a ceremony witnessed by President Salva Kiir at the president's office in Juba. Machar's return to Juba was seen as a positive step and an opportunity to improve the chances of establishing a lasting peace after years of conflict. This, as events unfolded in July, was short-lived after he fled the country following the fighting that erupted in Juba in July. Over to you, Suzanne.
2016 was also a year that saw insecurity spread to Mutu West County in the former Western Equatoria state. It began with the killing of an executive director of the county, John Kiliopa, in a shooting incident when he went to investigate the killing of two soldiers who were gunned down along the Mundrim-Volo Road. David Lucan has more.
Investigations were launched to establish the cause of the shootings reported in the area. The incident resulted to the displacement of many residents as many fled to the bush for safety, exposing the vulnerable groups such as women, children and elderly to terrible conditions. Many civilians also crossed to Yei due to insecurity. MP Murat Moseka, representing a constituency in Mundri, informed the legislators that the situation remains despite extra deployment of SPLA soldiers. Moseka says more than 100 trucks of humanitarian assistance cannot access the area because of the insecurity.
The relief trucks that were supposed to go to Rumbek and Awil are stranded between Bari and Medeu. 150 trucks transporting relief heading to northern Bahr el Ghazal and Rumbek. The trucks are stranded because of insecurity at a time when people are suffering from hunger at the place where these trucks are going to. This situation is too much. By this sequence of events, we might think of worst scenario, or we might reach a situation where even relief trucks might not be able to pass, and people are now dying of hunger.
The July 8th incident in Juba left an estimated 115 soldiers dead after gun battle broke out in the capital Juba on the eve of the country's fifth independence anniversary. The fighting began outside the presidential compound as President Salva Kiir was meeting with former Vice President Riek Machar, and soon the conflict spread through the city. Our reporter Henry Lokuri was at J1 when the conflict broke out.
Heavy gunfire erupted outside the president's compound just as the three leaders prepared to address the nation on the latest fighting in the capital Juba that sent a fresh wave of panic among the citizens. President Salva Kiir, backed by his first vice president Riek Machar and the second vice president Wani Igga, called for calm in Juba after heavy gunfire rocked the city on Friday evening. The three leaders said they did not know the cause of the gunfire, but stood firm, assuring the citizens of their commitment to investigate the two shooting incidents. This is the statement by President Kiir
What is happening outside is something that we cannot explain to you. Three of us were sitting inside here, meeting, discussing the situation of yesterday, what happened in Gudele, and then talking about what we can do in the implementation of the agreement and to build confidence among the forces and the civil population, to assure the civil population. So now this thing has started before we could even finish. And we were actually, after finishing, I was going to give a statement on the occasion of the independence of South Sudan.
President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar appealed for calm as fears grew in Juba of a return to civil war. Many people, worried of their safety, stayed indoors and the streets were almost deserted except for soldiers. As people started fleeing the country, fresh reports of sexual violence emerged. The UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan continued to receive deeply disturbing reports of sexual violence, including rape and gang rape by men in uniform and in plain clothes against civilians, including minors, around UN House and in other areas of Juba. Henry Lokori with the details.
Preliminary investigations by the United Nations into the July fighting in Juba revealed that government security forces carried out killings and rapes and looted and destroyed properties. In a written statement, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zaid Raad Al Hussein, says more than 70 civilian deaths were recorded between the 8th and 25th of July. The UN Human Rights Chief asked the UN Security Council to take stronger action against perpetrators of the sexual violence. Speaking to Radio Miraya, Rupert Colville, a spokesperson for UN Human Rights Office in Geneva, said more than 200 cases of sexual abuse have been documented in Juba.
Well, most importantly, and it just doesn't seem to happen in South Sudan, and we've been saying it for years, when crimes like these are committed, no matter who commits them, whether it's civilians committing them or whether it's policemen committing them or soldiers committing them or officers, they're crimes. So they should be investigated and they should be brought to courts and they should be, if there's enough evidence and the case is handled properly, they should be convicted. The problem is, you know, you've had now for several years appalling crimes taking place in South Sudan, not just in Juba, but obviously in many other parts of the country. And really no kind of justice system functioning properly to as a disincentive. So these young fighters, soldiers, whoever it is, they don't feel they're risking anything. So when the situation gets, you know, wild and anarchic, they do these kinds of acts. They kill, they rape, they do whatever they want to do, and they know they're going to get away with it. So any society, you know, if that's happening, you've got a problem, big, big problem. So it's extremely important the government puts a lot more effort into making sure that people who commit these kind of crimes pay a price for it.
Rights groups have also accused South Sudan's military of committing war crimes and crimes against humanity.
Let's take a music break. I'll be back with more in this special program, The Year in Review.
Avec nos différences, nous voulons la paix.
Welcome back. Sexual assault, rape and abuse of women and children continue to dominate headlines in August after the fighting in Juba. Zainab Hawa Bankura, UN Special Representative on Sexual Violence in Conflict, flew into the country and expressed a sense of disappointment. Luak Nelson has a report.
I feel a sense of betrayal. I feel extremely angry because I'm an African woman. I saw how these women have suffered in South Sudan, which was her opening remark when I spoke to Zainab Bankura on her second trip to South Sudan. I asked her how she felt about the recent reports of sexual violence targeting women and minors in South Sudan. This was her response.
I think a sense of disappointment, a sense of betrayal, because before going on the last trip you mentioned, I've already had about 3 or 4 meetings with the president, President Salva Kiir. I had met the opposition leader, Dr. Riek Machar, about 5 times. I met him in Addis, I met him in South Africa, and I met him back in South Sudan. So I have to say, I'm not only disappointed, I feel extremely angry, because, you know, I am an African woman, and I saw how these women have suffered in South Sudan. I mean, they went through a civil war over 50 years, and they suffered, they accepted, they jubilated when they had independence. They thought that for the first time in their life, they were going to have peace, only for that aspiration to be shattered. So I actually, as far as I'm concerned, I express my profound sympathy for the civilians, you know, because they have suffered so much, especially the women and girls who once again have to be plunged in conflict. And this is the third sign, because the 50 years, as I mentioned, then the December last year, and then now in July. So for me, I'm hot, I'm disappointed, I'm angry.
Still in August, the United States recommended that the United Nations Security Council authorized a force of 4,000 peacekeepers for South Sudan's capital, Juba, after a recent outbreak of violence. The U.S. circulated a draft resolution to the 15-member council that would approve a regional protection force to use all necessary means, including undertaking robust and active steps and engaging in direct operations where necessary to secure the capital and protect the airport and other key facilities. The draft resolution urged member states in the region to expedite contributions of rapidly deployable troops to ensure the full deployment of the regional protection force as soon as possible.
On September 2nd, a delegation from the United Nations Security Council arrived in South Sudan to reinforce messages made to the authorities, as well as discuss how the peacekeeping mission can help them improve the security and humanitarian situation in the wake of recent violence. The visit also followed the Council's renewal of ANMI's mandate, which included the approval of a 4,000-strong regional protection force to aid the security in the capital, Juba. Gabriel Shadar with the details.
The delegation led by the permanent representatives of the missions of Senegal and the United States included representatives of all other permanent and rotating member states of the Security Council. On arrival in the capital, Juba, U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power said the council members are completely united in their desire to see peace in South Sudan and to see the people of this country live with the security and the dignity that they have craved for a very long time. This was her statement.
We are all here in support of that peace agreement. It is extremely important that an enabling environment be created here by all stakeholders to allow for the implementation of that agreement. We have also come to make clear that the best way forward, the best way of averting further destabilization and giving that peace agreement a chance to take hold, giving the civilians a chance to receive the food that they vitally need, but more importantly, to get back to planting and taking care of their own destinies, One of the most important ways to do that is to allow the regional protection force that has just been authorized to be deployed. This was the force with a set of tasks specified in Resolution 2304, providing for free and safe movement in Juba, supporting the protection of vital infrastructure, and preventing threats against civilians.
The visit was also seen as a reiteration of the Council's full support expressed in the resolution for the UNMISS, as well as the Member States' commitment to seeing an end to the violence in South Sudan and a return to the full implementation of the peace agreement. At the end of the three-day trip by the UN Security Council, Transitional Government of National Unity agreed to the deployment of the Regional Protection Force in South Sudan. Cabinet First Minister Martin Elia Lomoro put out a communique stressing that the government's acceptance of the Regional Protection Force is aimed at improving the security situation. This is what he said.
The United Nations Security Council and the Transitional Government of National Unity agreed to work in a fresh spirit of cooperation to advance the interests of South Sudanese people, particularly their aspiration for justice, liberty, and prosperity. They agreed that the humanitarian and security needs of the people were paramount. To improve the security situation, the Transitional Government of National Unity gave its consent to the deployment as part of UNMISS of the Regional Protection Force recently authorized by United Nations Security Council Resolution 2304. Further, the United Nations Security Council agreed that the troops contributing countries, UNMISS, and the Transitional Government of National Unity will continue to work through the modalities of deployment, building upon the consultations of August 25th and September 1st respectively, and anticipating any further discussions that will follow.
Also in September, a Washington advocacy group, the Sentry, released an investigative report which claimed that the leaders of the two sides have enormous wealth inside and outside the country, at least some of it illegally. Gabriel Shajar again with the report.
The report was the first major project by the Sentry, whose partners have focused on the financial connections to endemic conflicts in some of Africa's most troubled places, including Somalia, the DRC Congo, and the Central African Republic. According to the report, top leaders involved in the conflict in South Sudan benefited financially from the continuing war and have effectively ensured that there is no accountability for the human rights violations and financial crimes.
One of the biggest stories in October was the release of 145 child soldiers fighting for two armed groups in South Sudan. The children were recruited by the Cobra faction and the SPLA in opposition armed groups which have been fighting the government. Henry Lokuri was in Pipor to witness the release of these child soldiers and now reports.
They were freed in the eastern region of Pipor and disarmed and provided with civilian clothes. Their release was a big story for a nation where many boys and girls have been abducted and forcibly recruited as child soldiers. Little wonder, therefore, that the top diplomats spared time to travel to Pibor to witness a milestone in the efforts to grant children dignity. While in Pibor, I spoke to some of the ambassadors, starting with the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, Molly Fee.
Today, 145 children put down their guns, were given new clothes, and are going to be given new opportunities provided by UNICEF in education and in livelihoods training and in counseling. The United States is a major donor to UNICEF to support this effort, but there are still nearly 17,000 child soldiers in South Sudan, and that's unacceptable. So everybody's got to work harder to stop fighting, adhere to the ceasefire, and begin to put South Sudan on a better path.
That's the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, Molly Fee, and now over to Norway's ambassador, Gunnar Holm.
First of all, it was an extremely important event because it marks an important development here in Pibor and in Boma State and in South Sudan. But also as a father, who had, my children are grown-ups now, but still, it was to see them like that was a very emotional thing. because it tells us that the Cobra faction and the child protection unit of the SPLA are doing a very important work now with the laying down of arms and the reintegration of these 147 children into the society again.
And I also spoke to the Netherlands ambassador to South Sudan, Geert Hot.
I think it's a very encouraging sign that we saw these 145 children this morning who put down their weapons and who took down their uniforms and got civilian clothes and probably have a better chance of a better future.
UNICEF said it was the largest release of child fighters since last year, but warned that children were still being recruited by various armed groups. UNICEF says 16,000 children are still in armed groups. Mahimbo Mndoe, UNICEF's representative in South Sudan, urged all parties to end the recruitment and to release children who are currently serving in their ranks. Back to you, Susan.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon sacked the commander of the peacekeeping force in South Sudan following a report that showed failure to protect civilians during violence earlier this year in Juba. David Lukan with the details.
The report from a UN special investigation found that a lack of leadership in the UN mission culminated in a chaotic and ineffective response during heavy fighting in the capital from July 8 to 11th. Ban spokesperson Stéphane Dujarric said the UN chief had asked for the immediate replacement of the force commander, Lieutenant General Johnson Mogoa Kimani Ondiaki.
The Secretary General is deeply distressed by these findings. He reiterates his outrage over the acts of violence committed in Juba in July and the continuing betrayal of the people of South Sudan by too many of its leaders. The Secretary General recognizes that the UN peacekeeping mission has saved hundreds of thousands of lives over the past 3 years, including in its protection of civilian sites, and commends the mission's personnel for their dedication. He is, nonetheless, alarmed by the serious shortcomings identified by the special investigation, which were evident in the mission's failure to fully implement its mandate to protect civilians and UN staff during the conflict.
The government of Kenya reacted by pulling out troops from South Sudan, and the chief of the UN peacekeeping department, Obe Latsu, regretted the decision by government of Kenya to withdraw its peacekeeping forces out of South Sudan.
That, of course, is something that we are the first to regret very much, because Kenya has been a solid contributor of troops and police to peacekeeping operations. It is their sovereign decision, but I respect that, but of course I regret it, and we are assessing what consequences this has on the regional protection force that was decided upon by the Security Council recently, and we're trying to bring into existence as quickly as possible.
UN peacekeepers have been deployed to South Sudan since the country gained independence from Sudan in 2011.
Also, the month of November saw the special representative of the Secretary General to South Sudan, Ellen McGrethe Loy, end her term of office in South Sudan. David Lukan again.
Ellen Margrethe Loy of Denmark was appointed on 23rd July 2014 as the Special Representative of the Secretary General and Head of the United Nations Mission in Republic of South Sudan, UNMISS. She served in South Sudan amid what has been described as the most challenging UN peacekeeping missions, and she came to the end of her tenure. Ms. Loy stressed in an exit interview with Radio Mirai the importance of silencing the guns and thinking about the future of the boys and girls of South Sudan.
I would have hoped I would have left a more peaceful South Sudan behind me, but I am still hopeful because the people of South Sudan want peace. They want to promote the country and live in peace with one another and pursue their dreams and aspirations. I have to say that the guns must be silent. Guns and bullets are not a solution in South Sudan. You suffered so long during the independence war. It is not fair for any citizen in South Sudan to continue to suffer because of internal political disputes.
Also this year saw Antonio Guterres being sworn in as the ninth Secretary General of the United Nations. The oath was administered by Peter Thompson, President of the 71st session of the General Assembly at the UN headquarters in New York. Sebit Abdu reports.
Antonio Guterres, the former UN Refugees Chief and one-time Prime Minister of Portugal, was elected by acclamation in the General Assembly in October and takes off from Ban Ki-moon for a 5-year term on the 1st of January. In his inauguration speech, Mr. Guterres pledged to reposition development at the center of UN work and build on a breakthrough made by his presidency. Ban Ki-moon in the area of climate change and fostering achievement in sustainable development goals. The 67 years old incoming Secretary General also spoke out on his agenda to restructure relations between people and their leaders. Here is part of his inauguration speech.
It is time to reconstruct relations between people and leaders, national and international. Time for leaders to listen and show that they care about their own people and about the global stability and solidarity on which we all depend. And it's time for the United Nations to do the same, to recognize its shortcomings and to reform the way it works. The organization is the cornerstone of multilateralism and has contributed to decades of relative peace. But the challenges are now surpassing our ability to respond. The UN must be ready to change. Our most serious shortcoming is our inability to prevent crises. The United Nations was born from war. Today, we must be here for peace.
Meanwhile, the Assembly earlier thanked growing tribute to Ban Ki-moon, praising him for his 10-year service at the helm of the organization. The outgoing Secretary General thanked the General Assembly for their support. Sebit Abdu reporting for Redi Mirai News.
Finally, the big story of the year possibly could be the fact that South Sudan escaped landing into an arms embargo despite concerns raised about the number of arms in circulation and their impact on the country's stability. The UN Security Council voted against imposing an arms embargo on South Sudan and designating key figures for targeted sanctions. The UN Security Council voted on Friday against a new draft that sought to impose an arms embargo on South Sudan and targeted sanctions on three key government and opposition figures. Gabriel Shadar reports.
The proposal was defeated by a vote of 7 in favor to none against, with 8 abstentions. And if adopted, the draft would have instituted a ban on arms sale to South Sudan, as well as designating 3 officials as subject to an asset freeze and travel ban. France, New Zealand, Spain, Ukraine, United Kingdom, United States and Uruguay voted in favor of the draft resolution. This is how Samantha Power, the U.S. representative of the UN and the key advocate of the terms of the embargo, reacted.
This resolution would not have been a panacea. We are not naive. It would not have solved the underlying political crisis at the heart of what has divided South Sudan. But the arms embargo would have had some significant effects. It would have made it impossible for the government of South Sudan to continue to use the precious resources they have to buy heavy weapons armaments.
France's representative to the United Nations, François de Lattre, expressed regret over the draft resolution's failure, and he noted that an arms embargo, which France supported, would have reduced the risks and promoted an environment conducive to political dialogue, the only path to peace in the country. UK's permanent representative to the United Nations, Matthew Raycroft, said the Council had the opportunity to stop the flow of weapons and targeted sanctions against individuals would have had a chance to demonstrate real repercussions.
Words are not good enough. We must now see concrete actions resulting from those promises. We had a chance to take a small step towards changing this reality, and yet we have failed to do so. Inaction today does not abscond us all of our responsibilities. In fact, it places an even heavier burden. The Security Council, the African Union, IGAD, and all parties to the conflict in South Sudan have a responsibility to redouble our efforts for peace in the year ahead. The people of South Sudan have asked for it for long enough.
Representatives from China, Russia, Federation, Angola, Egypt, Japan, Malaysia, Senegal and Venezuela abstained. Wu Haiqiao, China's representative, said his country was committed to restoring peace and stability in South Sudan as soon as possible. He said the Council's actions should be conducive to political solution. He reiterated the need to be prudent regarding embargoes so as to prevent the situation from deteriorating.
China consistently supports the peace process in South Sudan and provides support to nation building and stability in South Sudan. Recently, the Chinese government special representative for African affairs visited South Sudan and the region to encourage the relevant actors to engage with each other to negotiate for peace. China is willing to work with the international community to continue with its constructive role in making further efforts to realize peace, enduring peace and stability in South Sudan.
The Russian Federation's representative and others who abstained maintained that arms embargoes and targeted sanctions had failed to have a positive effect in other situations of a similar nature. South Sudan's representative described the tabling of the draft as unfortunate in the light of the fact that President Salva Kiir had ordered the formation of a National Dialogue Steering Committee just a few days before, and he said such a commitment pointed to a more encouraging direction. He said those targeted for sanctions were critical to the implementation of all agreements and emphasized that punitive measures could only harden positions.
And with that, we have come to the end of this special edition of the Year in Review, taking us back through memory lane to find out the key stories that make headlines in South Sudan. To all our listeners, this is Susan Dokolo on behalf of the editorial team here at Radio Miraya, wishing you a happy and prosperous New Year 2017.
Antum testa beona ila Radio Miraya. صوت السلام.